Have you met LGBTQ programs at your school? And if not, why? In Hungary, NGOs organizing LGBTQ lectures at schools are facing increasing difficulties. How should these school programs work? Who gives these lectures and what kind of topics are covered? In this panel discussion, Gil Sen from the US will be sharing its experience with Hungarian organizations. Good evening, my name is Panna Balázsi. I will be moderating our discussion on how to raise awareness about LGBTQ people in schools, comparing the situation in Hungary and in the US. Please allow me to introduce our roundtable participants, and I would like to ask each of you in a nutshell to please introduce yourselves and the programs of your organization related to raising awareness about LGBTQ people in schools. May I ask Sofia Arredondo to start?
Hello, good morning here in the United States on the West Coast and evening to you all. I'm Sofia Arredondo, I'm the Director of Education and Youth Programs for GLSEN. I use she, her, and Aya pronouns. GLSEN's been around for 30 years now. We have an education and youth programs department, which I oversee. We create educational resources and professional development training for educators, and we have a student leadership component as well. I'll leave it at that. We also do policy work, and we have a network of chapters across the country who do this work at the local level. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Sofia. Dorottya Rédai.
Mm-hmm. Hello. I'm a member of Labris Lesbian Association. I'm a gender and education scholar, and I work in our school program, which is called Getting to Know LGBT People in English. And the program started in 2000. And we've been running this program since then, which is getting more difficult in the past years. And also COVID doesn't help because we visit schools normally, like in person. And we have been training volunteers to be able to facilitate these school classes. We train annually about 15 people, and we have been working on improving our program. We have developed tools for teachers to use, including a handbook, which discusses kind of common or typical issues, LGBT issues in schools. And we have also developed a video series on the same topics, and have tried to train people in the countryside because LGBT activism is very centered in Budapest, in the capital. Yeah. And now we are trying to develop our classes online. So to develop a sort of, so to collect methods of like how you can do these classes online, and we are soon going to train our already trained volunteers to use online tools to facilitate classes.
Great, thank you, Dorottya. Eric Samello, hi.
Hello, I am from the Southeast United States, and I am one of the student leaders that GLSEN's youth programs helps encourage and blossom. And I am, I'm a second year returning member of their National Student Council, and I am the student head of policy work for GLSEN.
Last but not least, Adam Böti.
Hello, I'm Adam, and I work for Amnesty International. It's so good to be here. Thank you. I am head of human rights education at Amnesty International Hungary, and we have a school program for schools, for teachers, for parents, and we work in schools holding and delivering workshops And how we do it is to train volunteer educators and they would go into the schools. And now very recently we have started to train teachers, and we have some online e-learning platforms as well in Hungarian. So we kind of try to reach the students with all means possible. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for taking part in this very important discussion. After all, it can be a life-altering experience for LGBTQ students to take part in a school program that aims to raise awareness about LGBTQ people in schools. At the beginning of February, Budapest Pride followers were asked in an Instagram story about their opinion regarding school LGBTQ programs and lectures. The interest was tremendous, mostly among young people. However, only 5% of the respondents stated that there has been an LGBTQ lecture in their school. The other or second question that was asked was about what these school programs should cover. A total of 191 answers were received. And I will just give you a really quick rundown of what type of answers were most often mentioned. Raising awareness among non-LGBTQ people, the importance of being accepted, the prevention of bullying, how mainstream society should create a safe environment for LGBTQ people for coming out, equal rights and the responsibility of teachers. Offer confirmation that it is okay to be an LGBTQ person, how to come out and how to deal with homophobic people. Educate people about concepts such as the difference between sexual identity and sexual orientation, and about the various sexual orientations and sexual identities. Difficulties of LGBTQ life, discrimination, mental problems, negative effects of homophobia, and finally, why it's not okay to make jokes about others' sexual orientation or sexual identity. Well, that is a pretty thorough list of what the respondents feel are important topics to cover. So today we're here to talk about how things are, how they should be, and what we can all do to make things right. So first, I want to ask all of you, what prompted you or your organization to create LGBTQ related programs? Who would like to answer first? Sophia?
Sure, thank you again. So what I first want to start off with is that everything that was named is really global. I think that if you were, and we have a national school climate survey that elevates much of the same things that our students are experiencing and want assistance with and support around. So as I mentioned, we've been around for 30 years. In those 20 years ago, we issued a national school climate survey. Because we didn't have information from school districts about the experiences of LGBTQ plus students. And so without the research, without the data, particularly in US public schools, it's difficult then to make recommendations without data. So nobody was doing this work 20 years ago around capturing the experiences and needs of students. And so GLSEN created the National School Climate Survey, which we could share here with you if we could maybe drop it in the chat. What prompted the creation of programs afterwards was really the data. The high levels of bullying that we were seeing students say they experienced really propelled us to also think about what are the policies that exist that protect LGBTQ plus students in schools. And then that also prompted us to start creating educational resources, trainings. One of the things that we highlight at GLSEN are four pillars. So the four pillars to creating inclusive and safe schools are really policies that protect our students and educators. Educators who have been trained, who are aware, who are visibly supportive. Maybe we have something called a safe space sticker, something that indicates the rainbow or support for transgender and non-binary students. And then clubs that allow LGBTQ plus students to come together in the same way that other students might come together around their identity, where they can celebrate each other or they can organize. And I think Eric can speak a little bit more to that. And then the last piece is inclusive curriculum, allowing them to see themselves reflected. You mentioned that only 5% have had lessons, experienced lessons in about their identities. Here in the US, it's about 18%. But 19% of students will tell you they've learned negative things about LGBTQ plus students. So, 18% is certainly not enough. Students need to know what their history is, their contributions that they've made to history, in order to see a pathway to possibility and success. So we know all of these things really help with mental health, but more importantly with academic outcomes and students planning to move on to higher education. All of these four components are really key. And so this is why we do this work, why it continues to be important, even though as LGBTQ plus people, we are growing in visibility and growing in representation, our students continue to experience harassment and we need to create programming that interrupts it and makes it a safer and more inclusive space for students at school.
Mm-hmm. So since Eric's name was mentioned, you live in rural Alabama, which must not be the most obvious choice. Probably it's easier, I don't know, to live in San Diego or New York. I don't know, it's just my guess. But what Sophia said, it seems like you've come a long way, baby, but there's still a lot of work to do and a lot of things to cover. How do you feel, Eric? What is the situation currently in your life regarding these matters?
Well, I'm going to exclude COVID because that's a very out of the blue circumstance. But prior to that, my state made national news for banning an episode of a children's cartoon where a male aardvark married a male rat. And that's just kind of like where my government is in that place, in that regard. And I actually started my school's Gay Straight Alliance when I was a sophomore, because I did it because growing up my whole life, I had experienced a lot of bullying. And when I reached high school, I had some opportunities came upon me and I thought I have the chance to make a place in my school where people don't have to feel as alone as I felt for all those years as I growing up. So it's there's a lot more to go, but for being in Alabama, my school is surprisingly diverse and open-minded. So while it still has, again, there's a lot of progress still to be made, we were still able to make a club in our school with the approval of our principal and have meetings for a good several years before COVID hit and just provide a safe space for the students in my school that I knew didn't necessarily feel comfortable or safe in the school or at home. And I know from personal experience that having a space like that can really mean the world to someone who feels like they're alone and the world hates them.
And was it vital that you had such an inclusive school principal who allowed you to proceed and create an organization in your school?
It definitely made things much easier. There was pushback from some parents and a couple of kind of like our school is an organization that's not really a parent teacher association, but something kind of like that. There was some resistance from there, and a couple of the teachers gave us a little dirty looks, and there was a lot of resistance in the student body, but we had the principal, so he was the anchor that helped us get through this.
And Dorotya, how open are the schools that you encounter or you come in contact with to hold lectures to educate students?
Well, that's actually difficult to say because we have to be invited to schools, so we don't just go there but accept invitations. And those schools who invite us are either already very open, or maybe sometimes there's some teacher hears about us and maybe there's a homophobic incident or something, and then we get invited. But that's the more rare case. In most cases, either the principal or some teachers know us or find out about us on the internet or hear about us somewhere and invite us to schools where it's possible to go because it's open enough. There have been a few cases when we were invited by teachers to have a class outside the school because the teacher didn't want the school to know about it. And then we had to say no, because, you know, we are trying to talk about being out, so we cannot, like, you know, have a class like hiding along the river, you know, or something. And sometimes there are cases when there have been cases when the principal or somebody in the leadership blocked an invitation for us from a teacher. So it's really varied, but unfortunately we cannot really visit the schools that are averse in this respect, you know, where there is like rampant homophobia, transphobia. We don't really have experiences with that. Very rarely, one or two cases, but yeah.
Adam was really nodding when Dorotya was saying these things. So I imagine you encounter very similar circumstances. If you could reflect upon that, and also with regard to Eric's initiative, have you encountered other students who wish to create an organization to help their fellow students?
To answer your first question, I think we are in a bit different situation than the other program Dorotya was telling you about, because our program is not specifically LGBT program. Our program is a human rights education program. And what's really interesting in the Hungarian, I would say, society, and now that so these programs are not banned by law from schools, but there is a law stating indicating that a school principal can lose his or her job if they invite a program which violates a children or rights of a child, and this is it. So it's not that. Not that thorough, the law. And what we see is the chilling effect working, so that the principals don't invite any programs. And they started to, as I know, we are getting more invitations than getting to know LGBT people. And we are kind of still in some of the schools, but we also had some cancellations, like teacher inviting us, and then in a few weeks later they say, like, well, we have to postpone it because we had to do something this or that, and we can feel that it's not coming from the teacher, it's coming from a principal level or from somewhere else. So
would you put it into perspective for those who are not familiar with the background information regarding the legal status in Hungary?
Yes. Which part? Because, like, I can clarify a bit. Yeah. So there is this law that rule that says that the principal cannot invite such a program to a school which violates LGBT rights. But obviously, these programs are not violating rights. And it's just they just don't know, or they just afraid. And we have a constitution which is very recently were amended, and in the constitution now we can read that the mother is a woman and the father is a man. So it's just all crazy, and it's a bit, you know, there are these legal terms coming, but they are not really practical terms. And we understand how, like, that we have the right to go into the schools, but some principals are afraid, and we see, yeah, this as I mentioned, it's the chilling effect, or some sort of chilling effect, that, yeah, that they are afraid, yeah, to invite us and the other programs.
Go ahead, Dorotya.
Yeah, I would just like to add that this rule was introduced in 2019 in summer, when they changed the education law again, which happens very often, and then we had a semester when we also didn't get a lot of invitations, so we get less than usual, but then COVID hit, so we can't really say for sure that there's a chilling effect, because we didn't have enough time, but the problem is that so in Hungary there is this like anti-gender propaganda, which is going stronger and stronger. So, you know, conservative politicians supported by church invented this gender ideology notion, saying that it's gender is an ideology and it wants to eliminate genders and wants to turn everyone homosexual. That's, I mean, if you want to summarize it in one sentence, that's how I would explain it, and this ideology has slowly, I mean, over the past 2 years, crept into education governance. So it's not just, you know, some groups insist on the harmfulness of gender ideology, but the curricula has been changed accordingly. You know, laws like this have been introduced, the constitution has been amended along this line, this anti-gender line. So, and there was a, so last autumn, some things happened, which I may return to later, but there was a threat from the government that they are going to change the child protection law in the spring. To cover all areas of life, they said, and that sounds very bad. So we are pretty sure that this will include education and external educational programs. And the child protection discourse is getting stronger and stronger along with the anti-gender propaganda. So that's what's making our life difficult in the sense, because some Christian conservative people want to protect children from what they think is harmful for them, namely, you know, getting to know LGBT people and, you know, exercising their human rights and so on. So
obviously in Hungary, we are facing an increasing amount of difficulties, as you can see from the US, Sophia and Eric, but we cannot ignore COVID in this conversation in terms of offering perhaps, I don't know, individual assistance to people in need. If you cannot do it on an organizational or school level, as you've heard that we are facing this problem in Hungary, are there other channels, other ways to reach these students who really desire to receive this sort of assistance?
We don't have access, so to say, to individual children. I mean, we don't have and in the whole of the LGBT movement, there are no youth organizations. So that's a very sore lack, I would say, but I think that it would be very hard to establish a youth organization for LGBT youth because of what I was talking about. I don't think it would be very easy to like officially register such an organization because bureaucratic decisions are more and more influenced by politics and political views. So I've been thinking about it because I know that there are a lot of LGBT youth organizations elsewhere, both in Europe and in North America, but it's almost impossible for us to get in touch with individual young people. And as soon as we would try, we would be branded like pedophiles and, you know, harming children and corrupting children. It's a very strong discourse now, and whatever we do that has anything to do with young people, we immediately get this accusations.
However, we're not here to, you know, only listen to the terrible news. We're trying to offer hope. We're trying to offer solutions. Eric and Sophia, do you have any recommendations as to how this not easy situation could possibly be turned around, whether it's on an individual or a group or an organizational level? Eric?
Well, I know for this year, it has been, this year particularly, it's been super difficult to meet with my club at all and try to reach out to any of them just because my school's not allowing clubs to meet because of COVID. And on top of that, I'm a high school senior and I'm having to deal with juggling scholarships and college admissions all at the same time and finish out my year. It's a lot. So it's been really difficult to try to get everyone together, try to facilitate meetings, maybe try to do it through a third party so it's not directly school affiliated, so that I'm not technically violating any, you know, like no club gathering rules. But I know it's much easier on a small scale level, obviously, but I know like reaching out to students individually, just asking them how they are, asking them if they want to talk. I know out of every queer person that I know of in my school, I think the only ones with wholly accepting families are me, someone else in my grade, and someone who graduated last year. And everyone else that I know of either is just completely closeted, can't come out, just faces constant homophobia, or at least homophobia from one parent. And like I said before, reaching out to someone and finding that connection, just to talk to someone, or maybe try to have a conversation where you don't have to try to smother part of yourself for the sake of appeasing your parents. I know that can really mean the world to someone. And one of my friends even asked me if, you know, it would be possible to have a meeting again because she misses just being in the space, talking to queer people.
Sophia?
Yeah, I mean, I really echo what Eric has said, and we hear that from our students on our National Student Council. We also hear it from students who we support across the country. We know that some schools are allowing their clubs to meet, and their advisors are offering the internet in order to do that, a Google Classroom or a Zoom call. But for the students who don't have that happening, what we've tried to do as an organization is offer, we have Instagram Live. Eric has been a host and a guest before. Our National Student Council runs the Instagram Live. It's called the GLSEN Bulletin. It's half an hour every first and third Monday of the month. And students come together and there's always a topic. Sometimes it's about how are we taking care of each other? Or sometimes it's something fun about music or queer films or Black History Month this year, this month in particular. So using our national platform, our social media platforms to at least invite students on their phones, if they can't do it, you know, through their laptops in like the school setting, because parents are also listening more often, are engaged, are aware. And so it's a little trickier, but if we can use our national platform and our social media platforms to have moments where they can come and connect with each other, then we've done our best to do that. And for educators as well, we invite them to come listen to what students are saying, come listen to what their needs are, and reach out to them. If it's not in the classroom, it's through email, but check on your LGBTQ plus students as much as you can. And we are also inviting families who are supportive to check on their friends, right? Offer a Zoom call with them. Do a drive-by with, you know, bring food, because there are other issues that are happening too, right? Food insecurity, people have lost their jobs. So this is really a moment to show up as a community. There are other LGBT organizations that are doing the same. Around mental health, offering drop-in times on social media as well on their platforms to connect with students. So I think we're trying to do our best, but I know we are certainly not reaching everyone. So if you know someone or you're a student out there and you haven't seen one of your friends or your classmates on the screen in a while, do your best to check in on them. It's we're really having to turn to grassroots efforts. And also while depending on the internet, but all we can do is our best.
Thank you. Adam, has Amnesty International used social media and other platforms to reach out? I understand it's human rights, but really, you know, within that classification, of course, others can be included, such as LGBTQ people. So have you used these platforms to reach out to them?
Yes, we have. Yeah. What we did since a year now, since last March, is we had some online conversation opportunities, and all of it was like some of them were open to teachers or students. And what we also did is we have activists working or being active in our youth groups. So we have a youth activism program, and we even offered well-being sessions for them with a coach and with a facilitated conversation where they could share what's on their heart and mind. And we did that, and that was really very well received from the students, and we could do our so we could organize last summer our summer camp, where also everybody is invited, and who applies get to come if we are under the participants number. And there I just mentioned this because there we always have the feedback. We do something of write your feelings at the end of the day in colorful papers, and most of them wrote that this is a really good community for them because they can be whoever they want to be in this community, and it's so nice to be accepted and to accept others, and this is new for them, or not for everybody, of course, but for a lot of students in Hungary, this is a really welcoming and a supportive community. So it was really nice that we could do that even in last year, but that was in between the waves. Yeah. So we try and we want to do more, and we are asking feedbacks for feedbacks constantly. But of course as Sophia said, we cannot do everything, and we are trying.
Eric, did you raise your hand? No? Okay. You did or no?
I was just scratching my face.
Oh, all right. Sophia, you did say at during your introduction that really when things took off was when the foundation based on research was available. Do you have statistics as to the scope of bullying, lack of acceptance, fear of coming out, hate crimes, suicide rates? Do you have such statistics that you can work with or you can offer to us?
Yeah, so I mentioned our National School Climate Survey is issued, it's every 2 years. So we'll be launching one this year, but our results from 2019 show that 86% of LGBTQ plus students experienced harassment at school. So that's still a very high number. We also have some LGBTQ plus youth of color reports. And so for our LGBTQ plus youth of color, 2 out of 5 experience both bullying and harassment based on race and gender or sexual identity. So racism is also a huge concern within our school districts, as well as homophobia and transphobia, unfortunately. And for our transgender students, we uncovered that 84% of trans students feel unsafe at school because of their gender. We have about 30% of students who miss school at least once a month because they don't feel safe. We don't specifically track suicidality or mental health outcomes, but what we know is that when students don't feel safe, if they are experiencing harassment, that it impacts their their academic outcome, their self-esteem, they have higher rates of anxiety. So it's never about the identity, right, that causes the negative outcomes. It's society's interaction and response to our LGBTQ youth identities that is the problem, and is why it's so important to have folks trained, aware, educated, engaging with our communities. I myself am a parent, a queer parent. I have a queer child. I've had to navigate the public school system constantly wondering, do I come out now? Do I tell them now? How will I be treated? Some of the things that were mentioned about people losing their jobs because they introduced this topic, you know, that's still very relevant here in the United States, depending on where you live. And it can be in urban areas as much as rural areas. So, but those are some of the statistics that we have, that we've elevated, that we feel are most important, and that people are still shocked by, that the numbers are still so high.
Are the numbers similar in Hungary, Dorotya?
Well, we don't have much data, but there was a study in 2019 by another LGBT organization, Háttér, and they asked about 1,000 LGBT identified young people about their school experiences. It wasn't representative, but it was still 1,000 students, so it's a it was a large number, and a lot of them, like about 80% of them, experienced some sort of school harassment or bullying, and about 20% suffered physical abuse as well. So it's a lot, and about half of them experienced negative reactions from teachers, or that they didn't help them, and it turned out that schools that had anti-bullying strategy were handling these things much better. So it's important that on the school level, on the institutional level, there are some regulations, you know, which teachers and other school professionals can rely on. So that's very important to have some sort of institutional measures and practices to use.
Adam, does Amnesty have such statistics?
We don't, no. And I also don't, I'm not aware of any reliable statistics on that matter.
Okay, well, it appears that the figures are similar, without knowing exactly, but let's move away a little bit of all the difficulties and imagine things are so good that the school manages to invite such an organization and hold a class session where students are fairly open-minded at least. Tell us a little bit what happens in class during such a lecture when you're raising awareness about LGBTQ people to non-LGBTQ people, or they are probably the majority in a class, I assume. Mm-hmm. So who would like to start what happens in a class?
I can start.
Okay, Dorothea.
I actually wouldn't call it a lecture, because it's an interactive class. Mm-hmm. Our program was inspired by a similar American program. So Labris was established in 1999, and somehow very soon, I wasn't there at the time yet, but my colleagues who founded Labris, somehow they got connected to an American organization who was doing a personal story-based education program. And three of our members were invited to the US for a training. And that's how they brought in the knowledge to establish our program. So it's a personal story-based program. Two people go to a class and they start by talking about their lives in 5-10 minutes, and then students can ask questions. And then we do several interactive activities to discuss relevant issues or issues they are interested in. And in the end, which is very important, we always talk about what they can do if they experience abuse in their school or they suffer discrimination or harassment, or if they see their classmates being harassed. So that's usually a very important moment in the session, because for example, once I experienced something really touching, that the teacher who invited us told us, the facilitators, that there is one gay student in the class, but he's not out, but everybody knows. Towards the end of the class, we were talking about how you can support your classmates, you know, and all of this person's classmates stood up, you know, and started to explain that we would support him, and you know, we would accept him, and we would still be his friend. And this was the direct message to this closeted boy who didn't dare to come out yet, but everybody somehow knew. And I'm sure that after that he could. So these kind of stories happen in the class, and I think that's why. And also the personal stories are usually very strong, so they are touched by, you know, seeing real life gay people, and then, you know, who can tell them about how difficult it was for them and what makes them happy and so on. So,
and are they usually when this meeting starts closed-minded or open-minded to begin with? Is there a turnaround that you usually experience? Because I imagine that children mostly reiterate what they hear from home, what their parents think about these issues. So do you see that you have an effect on them and something changes along the way?
Young people are very mixed. We experience changes, so they are more open now than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and more knowledgeable as well. But usually attitudes are quite mixed, and we always ask them to fill in a short questionnaire at the end of the class. And one of the questions is about, like, what's your attitude to LGBT people? And then answers are like, I've always been open to them, you know. And then there's an item like, well, I never cared about it, but now I started to think, or I feel that I understand them better. And so these kind of responses, and there are always responses in every class. And sometimes it even happens. So in many schools, there are young people who belong to these extreme right-wing youth groups. And they usually try to be very nasty and disturb the class. But usually it's the classmates who kind of, you know, moderate them. And it has happened several times that one of them came up to us after the class ended and said, like, yeah, you know, I hated gay people, but actually now I don't feel so bad about them, or I started to think, you know. And then sometimes people come to us after the class ends, and they come out, or they start to talk about a friend who is LGBT, and so on. So there's a lot of so things happen during the class.
Okay, thank you. Sophia, what happens in a GLSEN class?
Yeah, so before I jump in, I want to just elevate their different strategies, right, for how this work gets done. And listening just now, thinking about when we invite the conversation, it has a ripple effect. It's like, oh, I have permission to even talk about these things. I have permission to engage in topics I might be exploring on the internet, but nobody ever brings into the classroom, right? And so now there's this opportunity. And I think when it comes from your teacher or your principal, whoever's the leader at your school, then there's this reinforced message that an expectation that we will be inclusive and accepting of all people. And now there's an opportunity to ask questions because I might be questioning, or I know someone who is questioning, or I know someone who has an LGBTQ family and hasn't shared it with anybody. You know, there's this beautiful ripple effect that can happen. And so with at GLSEN, if we go into a school, then typically where we start is around terminology. Like, you know, we have a community that is very dynamic with our language. It's constantly changing. But I think what is most important to emphasize is that you allow the student to use the words that are most comfortable to them, right? And if they tell you to use a word, then you use the word. If they tell you to use a new pronoun, use the new pronoun, right? So we start there, and then policies. Are there policies that you are aware of? Is there a non-discrimination policy? Is there an anti-bullying policy? Does it include LGBTQ plus students? And are you as an educator aware that it exists and that you need to be, and that you need to model, right, what the policy says? And then the other pieces then become about, we do absolutely share our research because we still have school districts across the country that don't capture school climate information or data about LGBTQ students. And so at least if we can talk about the national data, we also have state snapshots. So if we were to go to Alabama, the Alabama chapter, you know, would talk about like, what is it that students in Alabama are saying they experience, right? So it's all of those pieces, policy, the data, the permission to have this conversation, the conversation around language and terminology, and then the importance of student clubs, the importance of lesson plans that reflect the history that the LGBTQ people have contributed, or inviting guest speakers into your classroom, getting the content that's so available now, particularly on the internet. There are so many organizations that do the storytelling. StoryCorps is one of those organizations that has a beautiful library of videos where people can hear old recordings or interviews with LGBTQ plus people. The representation piece really, really matters. So that's what we would hope that you would expect or experience. And then also bringing in videos. We have videos, a video library from from GLSEN about what are students, students' voices, bring students into the room when you're talking about to educators about here's what they're experiencing. And then I don't know with Eric and your GSA prior to COVID, but some of our GSAs are doing trainings for staff. They have constructed their own trainings around, here's what we want you to know. Here's what we want you to learn about how to advocate for us, about how to protect us, and then how to reflect our lived experiences in the classroom, whether it's history or math or science, all of the subject matters must reflect our experiences.
Well, I'm sure it's different state by state, but as you heard from Dorotya, they can only go to schools where they are invited to. Is it the same situation with you, or it can be part of the curriculum in certain cases?
So for GLSEN trainings, it's typically by invitation. Mm-hmm. But we also try to strategize with our chapters across the country of like, here's how a school district can be preventative versus reactionary. So don't wait for an incident of transphobia or homophobia or, you know, unfortunately, or a suicide. Don't wait for those moments. This training, this content is about equity. It's about inclusion. It's about LGBTQ rights, our human rights, right? And so, yes, it's upon invitation, but we also have a strategy around, like, don't wait. Invite us now. And here are the things that we can teach you and support you in moving, like, beyond just a training, right?
Thank you, Sophia. Adam, would you reflect on this same topic? What happens in class? What is it that you do, and how does it affect those that have taken part?
Yes. So what we also do is to have an interactive conversation, and we have tools to make the conversation or shape the conversation in the direction where we want to be the conversation to take place. And I think the closest to this topic from our workshops is the one against school bullying, mm-hmm. where we talk about school bullying and what happens and what causes school bullying. And the other one where we talk about discrimination and stereotypes and hate crimes. And often we also have these experiences, not as much as Dorotya were mentioning, but sometimes we also have students coming up to us after the workshop and telling us about themselves and their personal stories and how they were bullied and how what this class gave them and how they want to speak up. And in one case, we have, that's just a story of how somebody, no, just actually, I'm just gonna tell the story. So after a class of hate crime, we call the workshop Hate Crimes, but it's about the stereotypes, discrimination and hate crimes. So boy in that class just came out to the class after this workshop what we did, and then he found the community among other Amnesty youth activists, and now he's also one of the volunteer educators who would go back to schools and do the same kind of job and kind of eye-opening lectures and not just lectures, but yeah, conversations. And I also wanted to reflect on Sophia that what we also bring this attitude with us to the classroom, this accepting, we accept what it is there, and we accept their opinions, and we might not agree with the opinions, but we accept that they are coming from somewhere and they now have this opinion, and this, in our experience, this is what helps to have the conversations and to that we can really talk about such issues in class.
Great, thank you. And I would like to turn to Eric and ask him that ever since he's become a rather active member of his school's life, what are the effects of the program that you started? What kind of feedbacks did you get? Because it certainly affects the mental health and well-being of essentially all students, because if we live in a society where, you know, we can accept each other, it's an entirely different ball game. So could you go into detail about these questions, please?
I know that, I mean, my club's attendance was pretty small. My school is also pretty small. It's about 500 to 600 people. I don't know the exact number. So the club proportionally is going to be very small. But I will never forget the first year that I was running it, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I was just kind of scrambling around trying to find resources all over the internet. That's how I actually first found GLSEN. You know, fast forward years later, we're all cozy now. But I will never forget, about halfway through the first year, this one girl texted the vice president, who was my friend, and told him that our meetings were the first place that she ever felt safe.
Wow.
And that was, like, getting just a semester in was very frustrating and difficult for a long time, and there was a lot of antagonism from the rest of the student body, but just hearing that one girl say that it's like I did it. I helped one person, and that's all I ever wanted to do. And later, I think either the same year or the next year, we took a GLSEN workshop, the allyship workshop, and we put posters all over the school. And we had an allyship workshop in the lunchroom. Turnout was pretty small again, but I think we had about 2 allies and like 7 queer people. So the 2 allies got a really, really good detailed description from a variety of queer people about how they could be better allies for us. And that was really great too. So it changed mindsets on like a very small scale, but it's working fundamentally. And I think it will get, hopefully in the future, we'll get to a point where it has a big school-wide impact. But even outside of the club, I go to a public school, and queer history and stuff can explicitly be taught in the curriculum. But some of my teachers in the past have, because there's a lot of I don't know, straight washing, kind of like whitewashing in history, where they just say, oh yeah, these 2 men died in each other's arms after living a whole long life together and they were best friends. Like, that's not how it was. And I've had a couple of teachers say, oh yeah, this historical figure was gay. This historical figure was actually trans. This historical figure wrote poems about men or women or whatever. And I remember 10th grade English class, we were doing a Harlem Renaissance unit, and my teacher was telling us about all these Black poets and musicians, and some of them who were queer in the Harlem Renaissance. And of course, when he said gay, everyone in the class turned and looked at me, but that was to be expected. And no one said anything bad, because the way that he delivered it was like, we were looking at these people's works of art through the lens of their identities. And I don't know how it affected other people, but I'm sure it was very welcome to hear that there were queer people in history, and history wasn't just this uniform line of heterosexual cisgenderness. Like, it was as dynamic as it was today. We're just a lot more open about it now.
Wow. That's quite something. So you did, however small it is, but you did alter the mindset of some people in your school, which is already a great accomplishment, I imagine. Okay. So Dorotya, I guess our situation is a little bit more difficult, but since I mentioned the well-being and the mental health of these students, how important it is to have such programs. But now again, we have COVID. What could you say to people listening and watching this conversation this evening who really need assistance, who really need someone to reach out to them? What can we offer at this point? And of course, this question goes for everybody. What do you recommend? How they can stay sane, and how they can go on if things prove to be difficult at the moment?
Well, that's a difficult question, because I don't know. I think all of us are impacted in some way or another by this situation. And it's quite hard, I think, to keep above the ground, you know, to not to sink into despair. I think it's very important to have company, even if it's like terribly exhausting to talk on Zoom all the time, and I don't know how, because that's difficult as well, but it's still very important to talk to people, to reach out to others. So I think that especially for young people who are more isolated for one reason or another, I think it can help if they try to find company, similar company on the internet. Of course, it has its risks as well, but somehow I think that now it's different than it was 10, 20 years ago. Young people are, as I said, more open about the topic, and they also organize themselves on various social media channels. So I think there are groups where, I'm not on Facebook, and I'm very proud of it, so I can't say concrete, but I know there are groups. So if you are on Facebook, you can find those groups, I think, and that can be a way to not to get completely isolated. also if there is need for psychological help or some sort of personal help, there is Hatter Society, another LGBT organization, which has a hotline that can be called. They can also be found on the internet, so they can be called by telephone or they receive emails. So if there is serious trouble, then it's good to reach a hotline. And not only Hatter, but I think there are other organizations that don't necessarily specify their activities for LGBT people, but young people at risk. And there are a couple of more hotlines that can also be reached, like Cake Pond, for example, or some others. So do try to get help if you are feeling really down, because I think it's not so difficult to find help now. And also you can read a lot of stuff on the internet to see that you are not alone. You know, other people have the same problem. Yeah, that's what I can say.
Sophia, what would you recommend?
Yeah, I would recommend a lot of the same things already mentioned. I think that the one-on-one checking in, I think it's really a lot of the responsibility of folks who may not be LGBTQ to check in on LGBTQ people and students in particular. If you are coming from a place of privilege, to use that privilege to leverage change, whether that's big, you know, federal, state, local change, and access even to internet, you know. And then if you are part of an organization, start talking about LGBTQ plus people and students and youth. Get involved in a lot of the racial justice work that is happening across the country, but also globally, because racial justice is also an LGBTQ issue, right? Trying to think about not looking at the lens through one scope, but a larger global scope. That's why I appreciate Amnesty International being here. But I think I would love to hear Eric, you know, just being a youth yourself, what can we do?
Well, I know that hearing people who are genuinely cared about my well-being is very appreciated at times. And I know I'm personally not, like, the pandemic's rough, but I don't feel very lonely because I have my family and everything. But when I was in middle school and I didn't know any other queer people and I felt completely isolated, I used to take my old 2010 iPod Touch, put it on incognito mode, and go watch every gay YouTube video I could find. Just like, I just type in gay and just watch videos, like BuzzFeed videos, just anything, just to see people existing as themselves, as queer people, gay jokes. It was just the most validating thing to help remind myself that I'm not alone. There are people like me. There are people like me who have made it, and there are people like me who are out there thriving in their lives. And if they can do that, then I can do that too. And that's something that I did, in addition to everything else that's already been stated, like reaching out to people, reading books, finding online communities. But that's also something that personally really helped me when I was about 12 to 13 years old.
Great, thank you. And finally, I ask Adam the same question. What do you recommend?
I think I would recommend all of the above, and what else, what have not been stated yet maybe, is that that for teachers and for school staff, they can also do the same for their students, and they can go for trainings, and they, so there are available trainings and available readings, what to do if you have an LGBT student. So these knowledge are available even in COVID times. You can go online and do your research and then find your trainings, and so you can do it. That this is what I would just say to the teachers, to add to everything else what's been previously said.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think we did go into detail about the situation at hand, how it would be in an ideal life, but we offered some solutions, but of course we have not come up with the great answer, but keep working, keep doing the good stuff, and good will come of it. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and have a great breakfast, lunch, and dinner since we're from such different time zones. Thank you, everyone.